Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to episode 142 of Geek Town Radio. And we have a new co-host this week, and his name is Gray. Say hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I am very well, thank you.
Good, good. Would you like to tell the ladies and gentlemen a little bit about yourself?
Of course. I am actually a teacher. I'm my day job, and in the weekends and evenings, I am a runner, and I watch films, and I like watching so much television. I don't know how I fit it all into my life.
Yes, you've actually kind of come on board Geek Town as the film reviewer, because it's one thing that we've not been massively covering that much recently, so it's quite useful. And you're London-based, so
yes.
You will be closer to London based in the next week or so.
Yes, exactly.
That will be quite useful. And you did one thing this weekend, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I went and saw a preview of Early Man, the Aardman Animations film.
Right, so yes.
That was exciting times. I was there just before the world premiere. They let sort of journalists and families of all the post-production crew in.
Oh, cool.
And it was a really good setup. They had lots of clowns and family entertainers for the little kids. And then
great.
Nick Park did an opening sort of speech before it played. So that was really nice to be part of. So
Yeah, they're quite cool, some of those, particularly the ones that are aimed at the kids, because they do tend to cater for the kids as well.
Yeah, so definitely.
They're quite good, those. So what else have you been doing this week?
So obviously, I have to mix it in with my job as well. So I have been watching films, and it obviously gives me things to talk about in the classroom because I teach film. So that's obviously really relevant. So this week, I went to see Early Man, and I also watched, possibly for the 14th time, Vertigo. It sounds bizarre, but it's a film the students have to study, but it's also become one of my favourite films. And I know when I was at school and I first studied media, I studied Psycho, and I got a bit hooked on Hitchcock.
Yeah.
So I'm watching Vertigo again for the 14th time. I've got some of the kids saying, don't you find that boring, sir? And I'm like, actually, no, I find something new every time.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. And I also watched a German film called The Wave.
Okay.
Again, for school, 2009 film. It's about a teacher who basically demonstrates to the children that he could still run a dictatorship in Germany despite them being like anti-Nazi, and quite an interesting film. And again, to watch teenagers watching these sorts of films is fascinating for me, because they go into it thinking, oh, I'm not going to like this, sir, I'm not going to like this, and they come out going, oh my word, that's amazing. And so that's really good. So those are my films. I've been doing a lot of retrospective viewing as a contributor. I think you're going to find me always doing things that
behind.
I should have watched right in the past. So
that's
I've been
fine.
Really trying to watch Black Mirror season 3, and I finished it just because I want to start watching season 4.
Yes.
So I finished watching season 3, and I know everyone talks about San Junipero, but my favourite one was the last one with Kelly MacDonald as the detective. I just thought it was such a brilliant episode, and it fascinated me, and I was sort of a bit hooked, so I enjoyed that.
Yes, good series.
Again, looking for the bizarre, I'm a big fan of this programme called 19-2, and it's a Canadian drama based on two police officers in Montreal.
Yeah.
And it, I think it originally started off as a French drama back in about 2009, 2011, and it got transferred to a Canadian one. And I thought I'd lost it, and it got moved from Spike to BET on Sky. And right. So I managed to catch up on season three, but I can't find out when season four is coming. And I think it's the last season. And obviously I follow Geek Town's list, and I've tried tweeting Bet, and I've tried tweeting the company in Canada, but had no news. I really want to see season four.
I'll have to have a look and see what I can find on that, because I don't think we've actually updated it since it moved off Spike. So I need to go and update that list.
Yeah, I know it. I lot because I had it on like a series link, and I for some fluke reason discovered it had been moved to Bet Channel, and then I found season three, but I really want season four.
Yeah.
I finally started This Is Us. It's been on my planner for months and months and months, and I didn't think I'd like it based on the premise that people told me about, but I'm like 4 or 5 episodes in now, and I'm a little bit hooked, and I want to try and get through that.
It is incredibly addictive, that show. Because I quite enjoyed it, and you do spend the first episode kind of wondering, where on earth is this going? And then that little twist at the end of the first episode kind of pushes you on. And then just the characterizations are so good. It's really solid series. I'm looking forward to that coming back.
Some good actors as well. You know, Milo Ventimiglia, I loved him from Heroes. I just really, really liked that. And Justin Hartley, ages I was like, where do I remember Justin Hartley from? And then I was like, oh, Smallville, of course. Yes. I remember watching that when I was younger.
Yes.
Completely hooked on that, and Revenge as well. So I did my Christmas catch up of all the DC shows before they returned. So I remember over Christmas I watched the big crossover episode, and I watched them all but Arrow. It's just this weird thing. I watched Supergirl, Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow, but I never got into Arrow, and I don't know why, but I even watched that episode of the crossover.
Yes. I know a lot of people that don't tend to watch Arrow but watch the others. I obviously watch all of them because I sort of have to anyway, but I know quite a few people that out of all the shows tend to rate Arrow the lowest, so it's no great surprise. They're back in the US this week. I don't know when they're back in the UK yet.
I saw Grant Gustin do sort of an Instagram about he's on trial in his first episode. So
yes.
I know from what it left it in the last episode before it broke. I'm really excited about that coming back.
Yes, it looks really good. It's just, I don't know when Sky are going to bring it back. I think the fact that they've messed around with the US scheduling with this weird sort of split of Supergirl's back for like 3 episodes, and then Legends is taking that slot. And so it's a bit all over the place. I'm not sure what that's going to do with Sky, whether they're going to run it in the same way or whether they're going to hold it for longer. And because the problem is, it's very difficult to predict with those shows because they've come back in January, February and March in previous years.
Yeah.
So there's no consistency. So we don't know when that's coming back.
They've got a new one joining, haven't they? But will not be part of the crossover.
Yes. The CW in America has Black Lightning joining. Black Lightning is coming to the UK. It's coming the week after, actually. It's coming on Netflix over here.
Yeah. So that won't play into like the crossover at all in the
No, not at the moment. But they then, having said that it's not part of the same universe, despite it being the same team, they're now saying there is a possibility that it may have a crossover at some point in the future, which is sort of what happened with Supergirl. So I don't know. If a crossover happens, you're just going to have to make sure you've got Netflix for that month.
and then watch it in the right sequence for it to make sense.
Yeah, exactly. So, I suspect if a crossover happens, as long as you've got Netflix and you've got Sky, it's not going to be a problem. If you haven't got Netflix, go and get like a free, the month for free whatever.
Yeah.
And just do that and turn it off again. It'll only cost you £7. So, it's a bit of a pain, but in the moment they're not planning crossovers, but they have said that it is a possibility. Yeah. So,
I started watching The Orville. Now, this comes with a bit of context because for people who now know me as the film reviewer, I am not a fan of like Star Wars or the Star Trek movies. It's just something I was in this bubble in Sussex as I grew up that I never really came to me. And so I've never really been into it. And so when The Orville came out and I thought, well, this is a different approach on sort of a sci-fi, I'm going to give it a try. And I'm 2 episodes in and I'm still there. I do find it a bit frustrating with the complete bizarre, like out there sort of situations, but right. You know what? I'm giving it a go. So I'm two episodes into The Orville and I'll keep going for a while, I think.
Good. I do love that show. It's interestingly, they've said that the second season is going to tone down some of the sillier stuff and play it more as a straight sci-fi, which I think is quite interesting. It is, for anybody that's seen it and has seen the Star Trek Next Generation, it is very, very Star Trek Next Generation, that. Much closer to it than Star Trek Discovery, which, I mean, Star Trek Discovery is brilliant, but this is far closer to what Next Generation was than Discovery is. So it's kind of interesting. But I really love that series. I think it's really good.
And then the rest of my viewing, because as I'm commuting at the moment before I move properly to London, are these loads of 30-minute programs to sort of like while I'm getting ready or going to bed and things like that. So right. I have been binging on Modern Family, Superstore, Trolley, The Simpsons, Bob's Burgers, Will and Grace, just these quick 30-minute things that don't take up a lot of thinking.
Yes.
And so I'm really up to date with all of those. There's controversial over the first Bob's Burgers episode. I don't know if you got that at all this week.
No, I haven't seen that.
So they used fan art. They were trying to do this sort of homage to all the fan art of Bob's Burgers.
Right.
And so every cut of a scene went to a new animation, and these different ways that obviously fans of the show have drawn Bob and his Bob's Burgers.
Right.
And I thought it was quite clever. But the reviews on some of the user reviews on some of the forums and IMDb and things like that are really slating the episode, saying it didn't work, it really distracting. And as I was like, Bob's Burgers isn't a serious drama.
No.
You don't have to get that worked up.
Yeah.
I thought it was nice. It was clever. Yeah, it gave something back to the fans.
So. Certainly sounds like a nice idea anyway. So
I'm loving Will and Grace's return.
Yes.
Think that well-deserved. I love Karen. I think she's an absolutely fantastic character. But yeah, I really, really, really enjoy that.
I mean, yeah, I've been watching that as well. It's as good, I think, as it was when it went off air, however many years ago it was. I mean, it's exactly the same show as it was back then. Possibly a little bit more political now because of some of the Trump stuff. Certainly the first episode was. But I can't remember. Maybe that stuff was in there previously and I just didn't notice as much. But I really, really fun show. And if you like Will and Grace before, this is just more of the same. But I really enjoy it, isn't it?
Sort of tap into it. And I've got all the original episodes on DVD somewhere, and I've got them on my Sky as well. And so, again, I watch those every so often when I'm getting ready and things like that. Yeah. And they're sometimes just nice to chill out too.
Yeah, very much so.
That's basically it. I've got a little bit of a week ahead planned. I know that Grace and Frankie is coming out on Friday on Netflix.
Yes.
And I binged those over the summer as I was moving jobs. So I had a week of not much to do. And someone had told me about Grace and Frankie, so I completely binged that. So I'm actually looking really, really looking forward to it coming this Friday.
Yes.
I've also got to catch up with some of the Shondaland shows. So if I spent most of this week catching up on the DC shows, I've now got to catch up on the How to Get Away with Murder, which came back, and Grey's Anatomy, which I want to catch up on as well, just so I can be fully prepared as they... before they go on their sort of mid-season breaks and returns.
Yes. I mean, How to Get Away with Murder came back this week, which is a Shondaland series, which I've been quite enjoying that. I mean, they get more and more preposterous as you go through the Shondaland shows, but I've been quite thoroughly enjoying How to Get Away with Murder since the beginning. I love the sort of time jump things where they kind of jump forward and you've kind of got to work out how they got to where they got to, you know, in the story. So,
yeah.
That I really quite enjoy.
Is it the last one? Am I right in the rumours that this is the last season?
Officially, no. They've not cancelled it yet. Maybe. I don't know what the... I'll have to go and check what the ratings are for it. But possible, because she has got quite a few shows out at the moment.
Yeah.
the network has, and they've got a new one starting as well. They might have a couple of new ones actually. So maybe, but
Scandal's definitely finishing. Thinking of Shondaland shows, that is ending. So I've got about two episodes to catch up on with that as well. So
there's a lot of the Shondaland stuff out there. I've not watched Chicago Fire at all, and I've got to catch up with Grace and Frankie because everybody tells me it's great, and it's just one that keeps on slipping away from me, and I've not got around to watching, but everybody says it's brilliant. So it's one that I need to get to. Mainly this week, I mean, I've done quite a lot of Netflix catching up. Star Trek Discovery, of course, came back last week, which I've been watching. Mike, who occasionally does this show, tweeted me saying it's like Game of Thrones in space, this show, because they are fairly slapdash with whether characters survive or not, which is completely not Star Trek at all. If you've never watched Star Trek, Discovery is quite a good place to get into it, I think, because it's so much not Star Trek.
Yeah.
I remember Matt, when he was on, sort of says it's Star Trek for his age group, and you know, he's a child because he's 22 or something. So it is a very different take on Star Trek, but they are incredibly liberal with whether characters survive or not, which is great fun.
Did they kill someone this week? Did I read something on a stream that someone did shock?
They gave quite a shock death last week. I don't think they killed anybody this week. There's an episode that came out, we're recording this on the Monday, so there's an episode that came out today, which I have just watched, which again is superb. And there is a fanfic theory which has been going around quite recently, which I won't go into, but it does resolve that one way or another, that fan theory. This week we get to find out whether it's correct or not. There is that. But yeah, I mean, honestly, superb, very well-written drama. And
I'll put it on the list, Dave. I'll put it on the list. I'll try.
Yeah, it's, you know, you really need to get into more sci-fi. Also, if you're prepared to sort of get into sci-fi a bit more, The Expanse is the other thing you should look at, which is a Netflix show over here. That's a really good, well-written drama series. So, and you've got Altered Carbon coming soon as well, which again is another superb-looking series. Yeah,
that was an exciting trailer to watch.
It was. I'm really looking forward to that. Other things this week, changing tack entirely, there is a show called My Next Guest Needs No Introduction, which is Dave Letterman's new show. Dave Letterman, the American talk show host, who has been off TV for a few years now, but he's now back with a monthly talk show. So it's one 60-minute episode a month they're releasing. Mm-hmm. There's six episodes in this first series, and the first episode, the guest for the entire 60 minutes is Barack Obama.
Wow.
So they...
I did see it pop up on my Netflix. It told me it recommended that as a show.
Yeah. The one next month is George Clooney. So it's the type of guest you would dream of having on a chat show. They're either high-profile actors or high-profile politicians. They're people that interest Dave Letterman. Mm-hmm. And he managed to get Obama on for the first one, which is a fascinating interview. It's the first time he's really been interviewed since Trump came to office. They skirt round the issue of Trump quite a lot without directly mentioning him, but they skirt round some of the conversation points around that. So it's not like, what do you think of the current administration? There's none of that. It's more about sort of his life and him growing up and that sort of stuff. And they do discuss some of the current political climate, but not in so many words. But it's a really interesting, well put together interview thing of mainly the two of them just on chairs talking to each other, but there is some cut in stuff that he's gone out and shot as well. So it's a mixture of different things. But if you like sort of good, solid interviewing, that's worth going to look at.
Putting it on my list now. There you go.
In terms of network things coming back, Bull came back, which is a wonderfully fun standard US network show, but very, very watchable. Been thoroughly enjoying that. So that's back for its second season. Will and Grace, we already mentioned. iZombie has been the main thing I've been binging through at the moment because I was way, way behind on that. I'm now just at the start of the third season and I'm really thoroughly enjoying it. The overarching story for each season kind of shifts quite dramatically, and certainly the story going into the start of the third season changes things quite a lot, and I quite like it when shows do that, you know, when they are kind of moving on, and it's not just a repeat of the same thing over and over. So they're doing a really good job with that, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. So my plan is to try and catch up before the season comes back again. And then Altered Carbon, as we mentioned, the new trailer for that dropped, and it just looks phenomenal. Again, another Netflix show. That's a show I think could be worth getting Netflix for if you haven't got it. So
yeah.
I know we're plugging Netflix quite a lot. I don't have a deal or anything. This is it's very good at the moment. Netflix is really good. So it is worth going to watch. Altered Carbon, I think, is going to be a very special looking series.
I know. I mean, just when I saw the trailer, I'm quite a geek when it comes to like the ensemble cast, and so many faces were popping up in that trailer.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, so it's got Daikon Lakman, who is in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Kristin Lemon, who did Motive, the Canadian drama,
right.
Atoa Sandoa, who's in Chicago Med at the moment, James Purefoy, Tamara Taylor was in Bones, and Hiro Kanagawa, he's been in so much recently. He's been popping up in so many TV programs.
He's
been in Man in the High Castle, which I haven't been watching, but he was in Heroes Reborn. He's done a stint on The X-Files. He was in Legends of Tomorrow. It's that one of those actors that you recognize, and he just seems to be in so many programs, and then he's in this as well. You just think, well, it's got to have a really good caliber of story as well if it's going to have a good cast like that.
It's a really solid looking cast. Very, very interesting looking show. I mean, with things like Blade Runner coming out, it certainly has that sort of look to it, I would say.
Yeah,
it's got that sort of cyberpunk look to it. So I can't remember the exact date for that coming out, but I know it's very soon. I think it's early next month.
February. I think it's the first Friday in February.
I've been watching
it on like the third time.
Yes, I think that's correct. I know it's early February, so it'll be the first Friday in February, but that I think we'll definitely be one to go and watch out for. I think that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Next up, we have some TV and film news. So TV and film news this week, we start off as ever with the airdate updates. We've got a few interesting things that have popped up this week. Stana Katic's new show, Absentia, which is where she plays this police officer who is kidnapped, then sort of turns up 5 years later with no kind of memory of exactly what happened. She's treated as a victim, and then he's sort of treated as a suspect when an abduction starts happening again. So yeah, it looks quite interesting, this show. It starts on the 2nd of February on Amazon Prime, if you want to go and get a look at that. Stana Katic, of course, was one half of the Castle team, which was Castle was a great show as well, if you've not seen that. So we've got that coming. We've got an air date for the new espionage drama from Fox, which is called Deep State. This stars Mark Strong. It's coming on the 5th of April at 9 p.m, which is a Thursday. Mark Strong in anything is worth watching. So
he's very good, and to see him going to sort of head up a US drama is really good for him.
Yes, this looks like it's going to be a really solid, interesting, homelandy type, you know, 24 type, that sort of area of drama. It looks like maybe a bit darker than that, but it's looking like it's going to be that sort of solid espionage thing. Yeah, it's going out on Fox internationally, that, so everybody can see it. Luther has begun filming its fifth season in London with Giselle. So I guess a lot of people are very, very happy about that. You know, Luther's an amazing show, so I'm very happy to see that back. We don't know when it's going to wear it. I mean, if they're filming now, that probably places it at the earliest at the end of the year. My guess is it might take the January slot.
Yeah, we don't have a Sherlock coming back, do we? So
yeah,
you know, McMafia's had it this year, so what's going to take the January the first slot for 2019 if Sherlock's not ready? So
yeah,
potentially Luther.
Yes, that I think is probably when it's likely to go out. That would seem like the right sort of show for that. Mm-hmm. Also, we had the news this week that Michael J. Fox is going to be doing a 5-episode arc on Designated Survivor. And I posted this on Facebook and it got a ridiculously positive reaction. Designated Survivor is a really fun show. I mean, it's Jack Bauer as the president, essentially. He's not quite quite as kick-ass as Jack Bauer, but, you know, it's Kiefer, and Kiefer's just so watchable. It's sort of a little bit West Wing, but with Kiefer Sutherland as the president. But it's immensely fun and enjoyable. And, I adore Michael J. Fox. I think he's superb. And, I'm so happy that he's managing to get out and still kind of act even with all the stuff that he's dealing with.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy to see him in this, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that. So it's only a 5-episode arc, but I am very much looking forward to that. Also, we got the news over the weekend that Cosmos is coming back for a second series. Did you see the first one of these?
I didn't see this. And again, I think the sci-fi thing may have put me off, but I saw a trailer and I thought maybe that should go on my list if I get time. So
definitely, because it isn't really sci-fi. I mean, it's a documentary series, really. It's a science documentary series. And it's based on the original one, which was done by Carl Sagan. There are a number of references back to the original one. That was done back in the 70s. And inspired a sort of generation, including people like Neil deGrasse Tyson and various people like that. It inspired them to sort of get into science. And that was the idea with the 2014 series, was to bring that sort of thing back. And it's a mixture of live action and CGI and traditional animation to bring to life stories and concepts that are sort of about science in a very easily accessible way. Certainly, I mean, if you've got teen children, it's a great show for them to learn about science and that sort of stuff. But even as an adult, I found it incredibly enjoyable, and there's a lot of things you'll learn in there that you might not know from other places. They're bringing that back for another season. This one's called Possible Worlds, which explores sort of more stuff about the universe, because a lot of the last one was some of it about space, but a lot of it was about sort of technologies on Earth and that sort of thing.
Definitely. I have to allow science more into my life, I think, Dave. I'm going to really start accepting more science.
Yeah, I mean, the 2014 series went out on National Geographic and Fox. It was in 171 countries and in 43 languages, and won God knows how many Emmys and various other awards for it. Interesting, one of the backers of it is Seth MacFarlane, who is the guy behind Family Guy and The Orville, who was instrumental in getting the money together to bring the show, to basically pull the show together and getting it financed. So the team behind The Orville are actually behind this, despite the fact that they're wildly different shows. I mean, this is very much not sci-fi. It is science. You know, it's a science documentary series, just a very, very well done one. But if you've not seen Cosmos, the first season of that is on Netflix now. So I would urge you to go watch it.
As
I
say, another one to add to my list.
Yeah. And as I say, if you're parents with teen kids, it is a great thing as well to show kids, because it's incredibly engaging and there's a lot of fun CGI stuff in there which explains various things about science in the universe in a very, very easy way. So I would urge everybody to go and watch that. It's a superb series if you've not watched it.
Can I add a bit of film news before you go on to your next one?
Yes, sure.
Did you read the article about the John Wick TV series getting the go-ahead?
Yes, yes.
And being around the Continental, and then Keanu Reeves has sort of announced over the weekend that he hopes that he will get sort of like an appearance within the franchise if it goes ahead.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge fan of John Wick and John Wick 2, and that's quite exciting for that film to be going into a TV program. So
we posted something about that months and months ago, that it was in development. So it looks like, you know, they have finally picked it up. And I mean, Keanu is one of the nicest guys. If you've ever read anything about Keanu Reeves, go and read up on him, because he is some of the things that he's done, such as he gave away the money from the sequels and made millionaires out of all the people that did the CGI on the sequels of The Matrix, because he basically said, I've got enough money to live off multiple times over throughout my life. You have all the money, because without you guys, I wouldn't be here. So, and basically made overnight millionaires of all the people that worked on those films.
That's amazing.
And there are various things about the way he treats his family, the way he treats fans. He just seems like the nicest guy in the world. So yes, I'm sure they will have no problem getting him to come on and do some and bits on this if it helps them out. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that. I really enjoyed the movies as well. So that looks like it's going to be good. So moving on to some of the bigger news stories this week. First up, The Walking Dead has been renewed for a nice season. Which everybody, I think, probably expect. What was the interesting bit of news out of that, though, is Scott N. Gimble, who, if you've ever watched Talking Dead, you know who that guy is. He's been on multiple times. Who was the showrunner, has been removed, which is kind
is
of
that
interesting.
Decision?
Well, I don't know. He's essentially, he's been promoted out of the way, by the sounds of it. They created a new role for him called Chief Content Officer of all things Walking Dead. So he will be Chief Content Officer of Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead. The new showrunner will be Angela Kang, who has been a writer on the series since the second season and then got bumped to producer and then exec producer. So she's been around for quite a long time as well. We don't know exactly what's got them to make this change, other than, I mean, we know the ratings have been going down, for starters. The ratings have gone down quite a lot in the last couple of seasons. I mean, it's still fairly high rated internationally, but they have gone down on AMC in the US quite a lot. And there is the recent controversy from the mid-season finale of the show. I'm not going to go into spoilers too much, but they did massively alter one character's story arc from the comic books, which went down like a lead balloon with both fans.
And me included. I mean, I've been a fan since the first series and I've always tuned in, but it's lost me. It's completely lost me now. And I don't know if it's that decision, but I just found the last series just a real drain, series seven in particular. I wasn't enjoying it as much and I sort of struggled through. And then when I read about the decision that he'd made, I was like, maybe I don't want to carry on watching this. So I'm still in two minds whether I should actually continue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite interested to see where they go with it. I mean, I don't read the comic books. And I mean, as anybody that listened to the Walking Dead UK podcast that we do with Matt will know, I mean, those guys, Matt and Chris, read the comic books, so they know where the story was supposed to go. And this particular character has a huge story arc coming up, and now he doesn't on the TV show. So it's diverging a lot from where the comic book went. There is also the fact that behind the scenes, it sounds like it wasn't handled particularly well with the actor either, because he'd just bought his own house in Atlanta, and then literally having been sort of basically not told that this was coming up. So he bought a new house and then 2 months later is told you're off the show. Yeah. So it seems like the whole thing was handled very badly. Whether that's added to them removing him or whether it's just the ratings, I don't know. So we'll see, but we may get more kind of news coming out about that. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, still enjoying it. I think this season has been stronger than season seven. Season seven opened very well, but then dragged throughout.
Yeah.
This season has been a lot better, the All Out War stuff. They are supposed to be wrapping up All Out War at the end. They've said definitively it will end at the end of this season. And then we're assuming there is some form of time jump coming up, which would be quite good because a new showrunner can then lead it wherever they want to lead it. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, Walking Dead comes back. Fox UK, Monday the 26th of February at 9 p.m. So we'll see the resolution of the fairly shocking mid-season finale, and we'll see where they go from there. But that huge change from the comic books, so that's, I don't know, we'll see what happens. Moving on, Channel 4 are developing a TV adaptation of Gareth Edwards' movie Monsters. Did you see this film?
I didn't. I know I've been told I should have watched it. It's one of those things.
You of all people, I think, should have watched it. I mean, it's the original film, if you aren't aware of it, although it's called Monsters and is technically a sci-fi movie, it is not really a sci-fi movie. The essentially idea behind it was that this probe had been sent out into space to collect samples after NASA discovered alien life in the solar system. It crashes on re-entry over Central America, and not long after that, new life forms start appearing. So they end up having to quarantine a whole section of Central America. The actual story in Monsters, fairly simple, and it's not really sci-fi at all. It follows a US journalist played by Scoot McNairy who is strong-armed into going to try and rescue his wayward American tourist daughter of his boss who's gone off wandering in the infected zone, and he's got to try and sort of escort her back out of there, and he just happens to be the only guy that's in the area that can do it. It's quite a sort of small story that just happens to have this massive backdrop behind it. So it's quite an interesting setup because you don't need to kind of remake it. You can just take the same background and then attach another story to it.
Yeah.
So you say take the same premise that these aliens are in this infected zone. I mean, in the film, you barely see them. It's kind of alluded to and stuff, but I think there is one or two shots of them in the film. You barely see them because it was done as a little sort of, I think it was an independent movie. Ronan Bennett, who is the creator of Top Boy and Gunpowder as well, he's going to be running a showrunner on it, apparently. The guys who wrote Save Me, which is this new Sky Atlantic show that's coming up this year, and a show called Run, they are writing it. Edwards himself is not thought to be directly involved in the day-to-day running of the series, but I suspect he will at least be on board as an exec producer.
Yeah, he's got to be, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have something from him, I would have thought. But yeah, I think it's a very interesting thing for an adaptation because the premise was sort of detached from the story. So to plug another story into that same kind of world and background isn't really a huge leap. And it's quite interesting that it's Channel 4 doing this. It's not some kind of big US network. It's Channel 4 who are looking for a partner in it, the same way that they have with AMC on Humans and Electric Dreams, which is a partnership with Amazon.
Yeah.
So they're looking for a partner on it. It's still in very, very early development. The only thing that, I mean, Channel 4 called me and basically said, yeah, all I can really say is we are in development with it.
Oh.
And that was it. So they can't really say anything else because there isn't really anything else to say other than the fact it is there and they are doing it. So we'll bring you more on that when we know a bit more, if it goes anywhere. I mean, quite often these things start off in development and don't go anywhere. So
yeah, it has to work, doesn't it? They have to make sure that the audience are going to want to invest in it. So they're probably going to be getting really good script writers on it and things like that. So
so we'll see where that goes. But it could be quite interesting, I think. And certainly, I think the fact that it's Channel 4 doing it and seeing what they've done with things like Humans and Electric Dreams, I have quite confidence that they are probably the right people to handle this. Moving on, we've got another adaptation coming. This is Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicles, which I'm sure quite a lot of people, certainly of my age, will know these books. And apparently Brian Fuller has joined this series. We have mentioned before that they are making a TV series of the Vampire Chronicles because for a long time, Anne Rice didn't have the television or film rights because she sold them to, I don't know, Universal or one of the film companies, Paramount, I can't remember who it was. So she sold the rights, but because they hadn't done anything with them for 20 years or so, they all reverted back to her. So when they reverted back, she was like, yes, I've got them again, and immediately set about making a TV show. she's working on this TV series with her son Christopher, who is a writer himself as well. So those two have been kind of working and putting this together. They then announced that Brian Fuller, who you will know as being the person behind Pushing Daisies and Hannibal and up until fairly recently American Gods, and he was also on Star Trek Discovery as well, he has apparently joined them. And it's quite sweet really, because Christopher wrote this long kind of thing about how this came about. His connection to the show goes, or his connection to the books actually, goes back to the 1980s. He was a young teenager from Washington State. He wanted to work in Hollywood one day, and he wanted to work on an adaptation of Interview with the Vampire. So he got a copy of the San Francisco phone book and checked to see if the author of Interview with the Vampire had an enlisted phone number, and it turns out Anne Rice did, basically. So he called her and basically said, he was this teenage kid, and basically said, I would love to make your book for the big screen. Can I do it? So she said, well, there's a guy in Hollywood that had the rights and you're kind of too young, so go away, kid, hone your talent. Maybe you can do it Sunday. That kid, of course, was Brian Fuller, grew up to be one of the most innovative people in TV. Yeah. And he now has got his dream of working on a show which is based on the characters in Interview with the Vampire. So That's quite cool, really. I mean, are you familiar with these books?
I'm not. I mean, I do remember Interview with the Vampire when I was younger, because it came out when I was about 11. Mm. I remember it being like one of those shows that everybody really wanted to see. We weren't quite old enough to see it. And when we did see it, I remember key scenes. Not many memories stay with me. I think I remember French and Saunders doing a mock-up of it when I was right, younger as well, and finding that absolutely hilarious. So it would be something I'd be interested in, I suppose, because I sort of like those sorts of programs that take from the original novel, and if she's got it back, I think that might be quite interesting to see where she can go with it.
I mean, they've tried twice to make movies out of it. The first one was the Interview with the Vampire movie, which was Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, was actually a fairly good adaptation. One of the comments that people made was about Brad Pitt's character Louis was kind of whiny throughout of it, and they sort of said that was a criticism of the film, and it's not. It's actually a problem with the book. Louis is an annoying character in the book, so they actually made quite a faithful adaptation of it. Unfortunately, it's just that was always an issue with me in the book. I wanted to reach through the pages and slap him because he was so irritating. Tom Cruise made an amazing version of Lestat, I thought, in there. It was really good. I'm very keen to see a TV version of this, though, because there are 11 books in this series, and it kind of trundles through history. It starts off in the 18th century and ends up in modern day. So as you follow, I mean, they mainly follow Lestat across in the books, but they do follow some other characters as well. So it's going to be extremely interesting to see how they put this together and whether they set it in a particular time period or whether they are going to do that and start off in like one time period and move forward. The issue with Brian Fuller recently has been the fact that he hasn't been able to hold down a job because he was on Star Trek Discovery until they booted him off. He was on American Gods until they booted him off. Although the exec producer that's basically been left holding the baby after Brian left with Michael Green, who is the other showrunner, Star's CEO, who is basically the person that's been left with deciding what to do with the show, has they apparently left over issues with budget because they weren't being allowed to give the money, you know, to have the money they wanted to make American Gods season two the way they wanted to. So he's now come out and said, you know, Brian and Michael working with Neil have done a phenomenal job. Our partners at Fremantle are working with Brian and Michael to try and get their schedules and a way for them to continue to be involved. I mean, the original story was that it was a money issue. I mean, maybe it was a scheduling issue, but the fact that they both left at the same time would seem to say that it was a bit more than a scheduling issue. He then goes on to say that Neil Gaiman will be taking a more central role and moving forward in a more traditional showrunner function. Neil Gaiman then tweeted out, actually, no, I'm not, because I'm already a showrunner on Good Omens, which is going to be take up all of my time. I can't physically showrun two shows at the same time. So I will still be involved, but it's going to need a new permanent showrunner. So there seems to be conflicting stories about what's happening with American Gods. That's only going to be more confused with the fact that Brian Fuller now has this gig on Vampire Chronicles. He's also currently working on a reboot of Amazing Stories, which was an old Steven Spielberg series, like anthology series of sort of adventure stories. He's working on that as well. So he's already got two shows. I don't know how much time he's going to have to dedicate to American Gods if they want him back.
Yeah.
So yes.
He created two of my favorite programs from back in the day. So I don't know if you remember this, Dave. There's a program called Dead Like Me. It was around 2003. Yeah. And I know it only lasted one season or two seasons maybe, but it I absolutely brilliant. Loved it. And then obviously a few years after that, Pushing Daisies with Anna Friel.
Yeah.
That to me was one of the best programs ever. And I know that obviously was all during the writer's strike that we lost that program in particular. But I think Brian Fuller has got like a sort of a golden touch. But this whole culture of people being moved on and us getting a lot of it in the press, it just makes me wonder, has that always been happening? But the press just don't cover the people being moved on. As much as they are now?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's happened quite as much as I think we're getting maybe to know a lot of the showrunners more.
Yeah.
You know, with the advent of social media, we're getting a lot more connected with a lot of the showrunners. So you know who these people are more than you ever did, I think. The thing with Brian Fuller is if you leave him to do his thing, he's superb. The problem is if you get in the way, it goes wrong. And that's sort of what happened with Star Trek Discovery, which, you know, they have created a really good show, but Fuller was butting heads with everybody else there, and it wasn't going the direction exactly that he wanted, so he left. And the similar thing, by the sounds of it, has happened on American Gods. I mean, I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing. I mean, certainly with Discovery, I don't think it was necessarily a bad thing. He may have been wrong about what he wanted to do, but he may not have been. I mean, I don't know how much of his stuff actually survived. So it's very difficult to tell, but I have a lot of time for Brian Fuller because, like you, you know, I love Dead Like Me. I adored Pushing Daisies. I thought that was an amazing show. I don't know. I hope that Christopher Rice, Anne Rice, and Brian Fuller are all on the same page with this. and it goes well because it could be a brilliant, brilliant series. I think it could be dark and interesting. And I mean, it's not been picked up by anybody yet. They're still developing it, but hopefully it will end up on either a streaming service or it will end up on HBO, because it needs to have that freedom of not being restricted by a network TV, you know, US network TV. So we'll see where it lands, because I suspect it will land somewhere because it's a huge, huge property. So we'll see what happens with it. Hopefully they're all on the same page and it all goes well. So that's all the news for this week. Next up, we have the interview. The interview this week is with iTonya editor Tatiana S. Regal. Tatiana is a highly experienced TV and film editor. She's worked across a range of projects, from working with Quentin Tarantino on Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown to TV series like House. She's worked on movies such as Men Who Stare at Goats, There Will Be Blood, Their Finest Hours, which is out at the moment. Her most recent project has seen a reteam with her longtime collaborator and director Craig Gillespie on the darkly comic biopic iTonya. The film is a portrait of one of the most controversial figures in sport history and follows Tonya Harding's story from her abusive childhood to a shocking figure skating career, all while maintaining a tone that strikes a careful balance between the pitch black comedy and real life tragedy. For those that don't know this story, there was basically an incident where people around Tonya, in order to advance her career, attacked one of her competitors, which might just help you going into the interview. As editor, it was up to Tatiana to balance the film's complex moving parts and setting a pace for the ambitious story while giving both the drama and the humour room to shine. Her work on the film has just recently earned an American Cinema Editor's nomination. The film itself has also picked up multiple Emmy nominations as well, I think. So it looks really, really interesting and very funny, which is weird considering the subject matter, but it's worth going to look up the trailer, and it's out fairly soon, I think, in the UK. So here's the interview with Tatiana. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV.
Hello.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for taking a bit of time to come on and chat to me. I think you're the first editor we've spoken to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Then I can't go wrong.
No. So you've got nothing to compare it to. It's great. I guess everybody thinks at a basic level they know what an editor does, but can you sort of describe what your job is from your point of view?
Absolutely. I assemble the movie. Basically, they start shooting. I usually start around the time they begin shooting, sometimes a little bit before if it's a heavier visual effects movie.
Yeah.
But the norm is you start a little bit before, you know, more or less when they start shooting. And they shoot, and I get the material the very next day, especially now with digital. But even back in the film time, you know, they process it and turn it around and get it to the cutting room. And then I begin assembling it, sometimes on location, and sometimes I stay in Los Angeles away from them. And I start to put the movie together. I watch all the dailies. I talk to the director. Obviously, I read the script. I talk to the director. I get an idea of what they're going for, tone, et cetera, style maybe. And I begin to assemble the edits, the scene by scene, as you know, because they shoot it all out of order. And I generally send the edits to the director right away. Mm-hmm. They're very rough, but it gives the director an opportunity to, first of all, confirm that they're really getting all the coverage that they want, confirm that they're getting the performances that they want, make any adjustments tonally that they may need to do, and also begin a dialogue between them and me about how we're perceiving the footage and the story and stuff like that. So by the time they finish, you know, the anywhere from 5 weeks to 4 months or longer of shooting, depending on the movie, the director has seen almost all of the movie out of order in little bits and pieces. And then when they show up the week after they are shooting, finished shooting, we sit down and watch the movie beginning to end. And that's what we call an assembly, which is basically exactly how the script lays out. And then we begin the process of working on the movie, making sure the story is working, that scene by scene it's working, that it's not too long, that it's clear, that nothing is redundant. And just as you would do if you were writing a paper, basically. You write it all out, you reread it, and you keep making adjustments, moving this paragraph up here, et cetera, et cetera. And you work hand in hand with the director through the entire post process, adding in all the elements as they begin to come along. You start to get the sound people involved, the music people involved, the composer involved, the visual effects people involved. Then you start having screenings for audiences and get feedback and make adjustments accordingly. That's sort of a rough description of the process. At the end, we do all of the color timing, the sound mixing, and the, you know, working with the composer to get the score and then lay that in and add that in. And that's a real quick Cliff Notes version of the process.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it said before that a movie is kind of made three times, once in the writing, once in the principal photography, and then again in the edit.
True.
You know, that, yeah, you would subscribe to that as well.
Wholeheartedly, yeah. It's a very interesting thing because, you know, when it's in somebody's mind and they're writing it, it takes on another form and changes and develops. And the same thing during production, because you have now actors and locations and time and budget constraints and weather constraints and all of these things that start to happen. And it just keeps changing and changing and changing. Usually, frankly, for the better. I mean, this thing becomes its own, it has its own life. It becomes its own identity. And so when it's actually in the film form and you're watching it, something that may have been very clear in script form is all of a sudden not all that clear, or vice versa. Something that was, you know, that you felt in the script needed to be said or shown several times to make sure somebody got it. We get it very clearly. And sometimes that's even just a performance thing. You don't have to say the line of dialogue because your actor is so good that just with their eyes and expression is conveying something when that particular line of dialogue is no longer needed. So that's the process that you go through the whole time, just, you know, fine tuning it and getting to the place where you're really telling the story, you know, in the way you want to.
What's the sort of balance of, in terms of, do you basically pick the shots that you think work best? I'm just wondering the sort of balance between the director having a say and sort of what you're picking out. Is it basically you using your judgment to pick it, and then the director will go, yes, I like that, or no, I don't?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I on this particular film, I had a huge advantage because Craig Gillespie and I have worked, this is the fifth feature we've done together. Yeah. So obviously we know each other very well, and I know very clearly what he's going to want and what his sensibility is and his humor and his emotion and all of these sorts of things. Obviously, with a new director, that's more difficult, and there's a little more work that goes into, you know, communicating and getting to know each other that way. But generally, yes, the editor goes through, watches all of the dailies. You may get notes from the director of preferred takes, or I really like this particular moment, or something like that. And I look at those, and I obviously, you know, give weight to those things, absolutely. But I also, as an editor, I like to say I'm sort of the only member of the film crew that's actually the audience.
Yeah.
I have not been involved in this whole process getting up to that point. I've not been involved in the script rewrites and stuff like that. I've not been involved in the shooting. I've not been involved in all of those compromises and changes that happen through that whole process. I'm just watching it and reacting emotionally to what is actually what I'm feeling at that exact moment. And that's the challenge, is to stay fresh with it after the 9,000th time you've seen it. But you watch the dailies and all the different angles and takes and stuff like that. And I take notes and I try to remember my initial feelings, what really moved me, what, you know, thrilled me, what I found scary, whatever the moment is, and what I found truthful. And I use those takes or parts of takes and show it to the director. And hopefully we're on the same page. Oftentimes, as you get the movie as a whole, you want to go back and make adjustments anyway, because, you know, you need a particular character to whatever through the process, depending on the film. Yeah. But so you always are making little adjustments here and there. But yeah, I generally pick all of those initial takes. Hopefully I'm right. Hopefully we all agree that, and they stay, but it's a process and it's really fun and challenging.
Editing's one of the things that's always really interested me. If I've always thought if I worked in film, editing is the one thing I probably want to do.
Yeah. Well, obviously me too. Yeah. I have to say it's a wonderful job. When I first got out of college, I knew I wanted to get involved in film and I didn't really know what, and you know, nobody in my family was involved and I had no idea what it was. And so I sort of went through this list of jobs and kind of crossed them all off and ended up with editing. I didn't really even know what that was, but that's what I did. And it turned out, thank goodness, to be a really the perfect combination of using both sides of my brain, the creative and technical. Mm. And that's what I really like about it, because it is an extremely creative job and it is an extremely technical job. And it's especially now with technology that's changing. And so I'm always learning at work. You know, by the time I finish a movie, there's all kinds of new stuff that has happened and new workflows and hardware and programs and all of this stuff that I'm I'm always learning. And it keeps that part of the job really, really exciting. The creative part is always exciting and fun and challenging, but the technical side changes, you know,
yeah,
too fast.
Yes. Yeah. I come from a web development background. I know exactly what you mean.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
You're okay.
Yeah.
Especially out of date, but yes.
Yeah. It's one of those things that when I used to work for an agency, we used to hire graduates, because I always used to say that they're going to be on top of all the new stuff. So, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a joke in our cutting room sometimes. If some piece of equipment isn't working or we can't figure out why something's not working, the joke is, where's the 21-year-old? Let's find out and they'll figure it out.
Yeah. Exactly. I know exactly what you mean. So you mentioned that you didn't know anybody in the film industry. I mean, you've been to college, presumably to study film, but you didn't know anybody in the industry. So what did you go to college to study?
Political science.
Right. Okay. So how did you end up getting into the film industry then?
Well, I grew up in Los Angeles.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah. So it was around me. My father, it was teaching it, when I was young. He was teaching at UCLA. He's an astronomer and a physicist.
Oh, wow.
My mother was a school teacher. And so consequently, they wanted me to go to school for, like, you know, a regular degree, not a film school degree.
Yeah.
So that was the compromise that we made. I did that, but I knew I wanted to get involved in film. I loved movies. I loved going to movies. That's what I would do on my weekends. And I loved watching films over and over again. And like I said, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to do that. So when I got out of school, I came back and discovered, sort of narrowed it down to editing. And then I had, you know, distant acquaintances that were distantly attached to the film business. One was a student of my grandfather's who was a director who passed me off to an editor with whom he had worked in the past. And he passed me off to their assistant. And another was a friend of my stepfather's buddy, you know, all of these crazy things. And they were nice enough to sit down with me and start my networking process. You know, I had a couple of names, and from those names, I met other people and met other people and met other people. And, you know, because this was in the days before email and all of that, it was the old fashioned, you know, typing out letters, snail mail and, phone calls. And I had this chart so that if somebody did call me back, if I was fortunate enough that they call me back, I could look at this chart and figure out very quickly how I heard of them, how I got their name.
Wow.
So I would go, oh yeah, so-and-so gave me your name, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, my first job, I looked back and it was 9 generations down of people who knew people who knew people who knew people from those first couple of people. And that took about 2.5 weeks. And I got my first job in quotation marks, working for free on a very, very small, low budget movie. where they knew I knew nothing, but I was a body and willing to work. Mm. And so they taught me, and that's how I got started.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah. And it's been that ever since. I mean, it's always, it's freelance. So it's thing that involves that, you are perpetually unemployed and looking for your next job.
Yes. Yeah. So the film that you're recently finished is I, Tonya, which is the Tonya Harding story. I'm aware of the story because I'm old enough to have known about it when it originally happened. But it's an incredibly interesting thing to have to go through because you're following the person who was she wasn't the victim in the actual incident. You're following the person who was involved in the sort of kneecapping of this other of this competitor, wasn't it? It's a really interesting line you're having to thread, I guess, with a film like that. And it's a sort of dark comedy, isn't it? So
it is. It's a crazy, peculiar, as it turns out, very tragic story for all parties concerned. And I think the thing that I found most interesting about the story when I read the script was the way this story is told is not at all what I expected, because I, like you, remembered the story when it happened and remembered what the media told us. And it's very funny because there's a line in the movie that says, Jeff Galuli says, people even think that Tonya hit Nancy.
Yeah.
And that's actually how I remember it.
Yeah, that's how I remembered it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, it's been 25 years. Our memory does crazy things to us. And none of us were really probably paying that close attention at the time. It was just a media frenzy. One of the first real media frenzies, in this new age at that point of 24-hour, news cycle. And they had to fill stuff up. So they talked about it a lot, but they sadly spoke about it in very black and white terms. Tonya was the villain and Nancy was the angel. And that's how I remembered it. Mm. And the interesting thing about this script is it lets you look at it in through a much wider lens and lets you see the people for people, which to me, those are the sort of films I like to see. I find it's the people and the characters and everything like that that make it very interesting. And this particular one, by the time I got to the end of the script, I thought about Tonya Harding in a way I never expected to, not absolving her of anything and not whitewashing anything, but understanding where people come from and what their reality is and what informs them to their truth. The script is told from the point of view, the writer interviewed the real Tonya Harding and the real Jeff Galuli. And after he interviewed them, he realized that they had wildly contradictory views of the story. And he thought it was fascinating. And he said, this is a great way to show the story and to give people, access into their reality. That in combination with what the truth is, makes for a pretty fun way of telling a crazy story.
Yeah. I mean, I've only seen the trailer for it because I don't know whether it's out here yet, but I've only just seen the trailer for it.
You're right.
Because I was envisaging it being sort of, something fairly serious in terms of, but it's not. It's very funny and
it's a very serious. Well, it's both, and that's the really unique thing about the film. It's actually a very emotional, very tragic story. I think surprisingly so. That's what many people at the end of the film were like. Comment on that are like, wow, I had no idea it was going to be such an emotional story. And there is very, very funny stuff in it. I mean, it's you laugh a lot. You laugh and you cry. I mean, it's that old saying. It's a film where you laugh and you cry, and you do. And nobody, no matter how you feel about either Tonya Harding or Nancy Kerrigan or the situation, I don't think anybody walks out of the theater at the end of it seeing what they expected to see. It's a very different and unique and fun, really fun movie with lots of energy and emotion and comedy.
Yeah. No, I'm really interested to see it. And because I kind of looked at it and thought, oh, it's a thing about figure skating and that incident that happened. And it's not at all that when you watch the trailer. So yes, I'm really interested in seeing the whole thing. I will go and catch it when it comes out.
Please do.
For you, what was the most challenging thing on that movie?
Well, honestly, what we were just talking about, the general tone, I think it's very, very difficult from a storytelling perspective, to have something that is very emotional and tragic with comedy. And it's a fine line to walk. And you know, from an editorial perspective and a storytelling perspective, that was absolutely the most challenging. I mean, there were things that were challenging about, you know, these fantastic skating sequences and, you know, that were just fun to cut and really fun to put together. And each one has their own personality and energy and speed and for different parts of the movie and how those fit in. So, you know, the film, there are elements of the actual film specifically that were challenging, but the biggest thing was just this tonal issue that can, you know, a few degrees in any direction could be a bit of a disaster.
Yeah. Do you have a particular genre that you prefer to work in terms of the films? Because you've done things that, you know, like this, which is a very dark comedy. Fright Night was, you know, obviously more kind of horror-led. And then you've got things like the 3D concert movie of Glee, you know, which is, you know, so different.
And Men Who Stare at Schizophrenic.
Men Who Stare at Goats. And, you know, so you've got very different things. Is there anything, is it any type of particular genre you prefer cutting?
No, not really. I mean, I think the one thing that I would say, you know, the Glee concert movie was just music and fun. There's no real story there. But with the exception of that one, I think that I always gravitate towards story. You know, I not a particular genre. In fact, I try to avoid doing the same genre over and over again, if possible.
Yeah.
Editors can get typecast just like actors and anybody else.
Sensible.
Very, very quickly. You know, you can get to be known as the action editor, or the comedy editor, or the horror editor, or whatever. Which then, to me, begins to make your job very boring because you're sort of making the same movie over and over again. In the same way, I don't want to eat the same thing for dinner every night. I want to work on different things too. Yeah. So I actively try to mix that up to the best of my ability, as if I have any control over that. but I do really try to mix it up. I like it. As a rule, if I had to say what it would be, story motivated, if I'm touched by or interested in a particular story and the sort of films that I would like to go see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You've done a little bit of TV work as well.
Yeah.
You worked on House. I know you did a few episodes of, which was the incredible series. And a few other shows as well. Is there a difference in editing something for TV compared to editing for a movie, or other than the fact that the time is massively compressed?
Well, that's a big difference, and that makes that really does make the job tough.
Yeah.
There's not too much of a difference. I like both. I like both a lot. In fact, I've done a lot of television pilots, which is more similar to doing features, because you're sort of setting the style and the you know, the general tone of the whole thing right away because it hasn't been done before. Those times when I've worked on series, it was really nice because you really got to know, you had lots of time. There was one series that I worked on, American Dreams, for 3 seasons. You really got to know the characters, the storyline as it progressed over those seasons, obviously the whole cast and crew. So you knew, it was just a very, very comfortable, nurturing place to work, and really quite a lot of fun. The schedules are crazy. I mean, you're basically doing half a feature every 8 to 12 days. And it's very, very fast, which does teach you to really trust your instincts. Mm. You know, when I'm putting together a scene, it made me much faster is what it did. It made me trust and understand, you know, what I thought when I was, as I was constructing a scene, to trust my instincts and to continue to move forward quickly, just because you don't have time. Mm. When you're in the feature world, you do have the luxury of having a bit more time to kind of go back and confirm and change and, you know, perfect stuff a little bit more. And the creative process takes time too.
Yeah.
That's the frustrating part with TV for me, is just like, I felt like I didn't have the time to really work that creative side and just have time to let it, you know, sometimes you have to walk away for a couple of days and come back and you're like, oh, hey, I see that. I get it now. Mm. You know, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You're stuck and you get up and walk away and come back. And it's like, well, why? It was sitting right there. The piece was right there. Why couldn't I see it? That's the disadvantage with TV, is you just don't have the time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the composers I talk to say very much the same thing of you just have to go with your gut when you're writing for TV compared to a film.
Absolutely.
We were talking earlier about how the editing process can change a film. Has there been any time when you've been working on something that has utterly altered at the edit point from what you kind of originally thought the film would be?
Definitely. That's happened a number of times. Sometimes it happens within just a scene. You know, there's a scene that you're putting together that when it's in the context of the whole film, you realize that scene, if it's put in a different location, can mean something very, very different, or if you only show part of the scene. But I've worked on other films where I've come in to either help and or recut movies that were problematic, which is a really fun, difficult, and challenging thing to do. Because, you know, you're sort of walking into this somewhat chaotic situation that's often, you know, politically difficult and emotionally difficult for parties involved. And, you know, you have to come in and just try stuff and see if fresh eyes, you know, to come in and see if you can do it. And I have done that on a few films where I have massively changed what was there, either structurally or just performance wise. And it's really fun. It's not at all about somebody else doing something wrong. It's about, you know, sometimes you kind of go down a rabbit hole and you just can't, you're just too close to it and you just can't get yourself out. Or there's a personality thing, you know, between an editor and a director or the studio and the director or whatever it is. And you just sort of need somebody who's not involved in any of that drama to come in and say, hey, how about this?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a fun and challenging position to be in.
Yeah. That must be a difficult process to go through and just sort of walking it, because you're not entirely sure what you're walking into, I guess, sometimes.
Oh, you're never sure. You have no clue. There's a lot of like, ooh, I hope this works out. Sometimes though, when I do that, I've watched films and I can absolutely see what the issue is. You know, you can see that it's a wonderful movie, but it's just gotten in its own way. Other times I've watched the film, you know, there've been times where I've passed on jobs where I watch it and there've been times I've passed because I liked it. I'm like, why are you recutting this? This is great. And there are times when I've just watched it and I'm like, whoa, I don't know. I have no idea what I would do to help that movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't help you. And then, you know, but when I do watch something and I see that I think I can help it in some way, it's really, really fun to do that.
Mm. Does it make it difficult for you watching films these days? Because, I mean, can you just go in and watch something and kind of remove the editor part of your brain and sit and enjoy something? Or does it click in? Or do you know that it's not working and that's when it clicks in?
When a film is good and, you know, is emotionally working for me, I am an audience member 100%. I'm not watching anything but just the pleasure of watching a great movie. And that's really fun. If a film is not good, that's all I think about is, you know, why did they do this? What if they had done that? How come, you know, and that's not fun at all. But no, when it's a good movie, I can be just the best audience and not watch anything from any professional place.
That's good. I'll finish with the last two questions we always ask people. First question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Well, I just finished binge watching The Crown, which I love that show.
It's very popular.
It's just lovely. I mean, I have to say I'm extraordinarily impressed by it. It's a fun show to watch. About these people, but not really, especially as an American. And it's beautiful, and the performances are great, and the way it's shot's great, and the music's great. Everything's lovely about it. It's just really a fun show. So that's the first one that comes to mind. I recently watched, I'm trying to think what else. Oh, well, I actually recently just binge watched all of Game of Thrones,
which really?
I had worked on the pilot and I hadn't watched it since the pilot.
Wow.
And so I had the opportunity to just sit down and plow through. Well, at the time it was six seasons, and then I watched the seventh live, but plowed through all six seasons of it. And yeah, that was fun.
So did you, so if you worked on the pilot, did you have any inkling of how massive that show was going to end up becoming?
No, you never have any idea. I mean, not at all. I worked as an assistant editor on Pulp Fiction too, and that I had no clue about that one. You know, all I knew is that I loved the movie, and I could quote all of the lines, and we had a blast working on it, and Quentin was fantastic. And but you know, you're in a bubble, you're in a vacuum, and you have no clue what the world. I've worked on many films that I thought were fantastic and nobody else responded to them. So you have no clue. You finish it, you put it out there and you cross your fingers. And sometimes it's, you know, just a huge, massive reaction. And sometimes it's just like, oh, well, next.
Pulp Fiction must have been a crazy thing to be editing on, because that's just, I mean, that the way that that is cut together with it, you know, kind of in backwards and sort of random order and stuff, that must
It was fantastic. But that, you know, Quentin's script was that way. I mean, he put it together. It was that way from the beginning. And I don't think there was anything that moved around, actually, which is that I'll say that is one of the few films where it was probably the film where the least amount of structural work was done. And by least, I mean, I don't think any structural work was done in post.
Yeah.
It was 25 years ago, so I might be wrong, but if I remember it, but it was a blast. I've worked on 3 films with Quentin as the assistant and additional editor. I was working with Sally Menke, his longtime editor, for years. And that was amazing, amazing experience.
Yes, I can imagine it would be. Yeah. So last question, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present or future, which show would it be? Not a show. And you kind of stuff there because everybody says Game of Thrones for this question. You can't use it because you've already had it.
And I used it already?
Used it already and you can't use a show that you've already been on. So
I've really blown that, haven't I? Let's see. Here's my dog barking to help. You know, there's so many shows that I love. I really love Broadchurch. I'm drawing a blank now on shows. I watch television more than I watch movies, I'd have to say. I think there are a lot of really fantastic shows on television right now that I would be thrilled and honored to work on because they're so good. They're just so good.
Yeah.
And I'm completely drawing a blank. I apologize. I don't know what show I would love to work. Maybe the Crown, although I used that one before. Just because that's the latest thing that I've watched and really enjoyed. Handmaid's Tale was fantastic as well.
That's
an incredibly thought-provoking and fascinating show. Beautifully shot.
I'm quite looking forward to Altered Carbon. It's a new sci-fi show based on a Richard K. Morgan book. It's a new Netflix series.
I didn't know about that. That sounds great.
I was interviewing the production designer for Legends of Tomorrow. When I asked him that last question, he was going, Altered Carbon, that's the show I want to work for, because they're next door. I've seen the sets. It looks amazing.
Then I'm gonna use that as my answer. I don't know it, but now I'm intrigued. That's the one I'd like to work on.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, go look that up. That will be my tip. I shall let you go and get back to your day. But thank you for spending some time and coming on and talking to me.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking to you. Take care.
Yeah. Lovely talking to you. Cheers.
Bye.
So that was the interview with Tatiana. I hope you really enjoyed that. The movie is out on the 16th of February in the UK. If you want to go and catch that at cinemas, I urge you to do it because it does look like it's going to be really good. And you can go and see her work in action. Next up, we have some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week. We kick off with Britannia, which is a brand new show coming to Sky Atlantic on the 18th of January. You must have seen trailers for this because they've been all over the place.
I have, and it is on my series link. I am going to watch this one just in case it becomes a Game of Thrones.
I mean, it looks like it has potential to maybe do that. It's got a great cast. I mean, David Morrissey is always brilliant in everything. Joey Wanamaker as well. And it looks like it's going to be a really interesting show. They're actually dropping every episode on the 18th onto the Now TV and onto Sky Catch Up. So you can
very much like They did that with Tin Star, and I enjoyed that. So
yes, and Tin Star was great as well. That's back for another season as well. That's on the 18th. There's quite a few things starting on the 18th, actually. We've got Riverdale, which is back for the second half of that. That comes back to Netflix on the 18th as well. Dynasty is back for the second half of its first season. That's on the 18th as well. I watched a few episodes of that. It's utterly stupid, but quite entertaining to watch. You've got The Path, which is back for its third season. This is the Aaron Paul drama. It's about a fictional religion. I've been told this is quite good, but I haven't got around to watching it yet. That's on its third season. It's on Amazon Prime. That's on the 18th. Superstore season 2, that starts on ITV on the 18th of January at 8:30. It's basically following, because they've been doing these daily, haven't they? So it's sort of following on almost straight after the season 1, I think.
Yeah. So they've just been rolling it completely. Yeah. So the first season probably in US was in 2015 and 2016. So we've been getting them now, and I think what ITV2 are going to try and do, very much what E4 did with the Goldbergs back when they first brought that out. They're just going to try and run them continuously until they're fully up to date, and then have them part of their sort of preview comedy night schedule. So
I haven't caught any of these, but I'm assuming you're enjoying it if you've been watching it.
Yeah, I think it's slightly better than Trolleyed. I know it's got a lot of Trolleyed elements in it, where you sort of cut away and you've got the customers doing odd things. But you know, it's quite funny. It's got some really distinct characters that make up a better dynamic than I think than Trolleyed. And the first season was only, I think, 11 episodes, but the second one got bumped right up to 21. So I'm pretty certain they'll fire through those probably, and then start season 3 probably before Easter, around Easter, if they get their way. So
that's good. Cool. So, yes, but that's season 2. That starts on Superstore season 2, ITV2, 18th of January at 8:30. That's on. Grace and Frankie back on Netflix for its fourth season. That's on the 19th of January. So that's when you've got to be caught up to date with that. Then we've got 6, which is a drama about the US Navy SEALs. It's actually, I think it's a history show. You know, it's one of the History Channels, so it's quite a sort of dark, gritty drama about Navy SEALs based on real-life missions. They're inspired by real-life missions. That's coming to 5 Spike, because calling it Spike didn't have the right branding. I just hate 5 branding sometimes. But 5 Spike. So that's, surely you could call it 5 Spikes or, anyway. 5 Spike, 19th of January at 9 p.m. That's called 6. It's the same production designer that worked on Manhunt Unibomber, which is now on Netflix, which is brilliant if you haven't watched that. Well worth going to see.
I heard you talking about that last week.
Yeah, well worth going to watch that. Call the Midwife back for its 7th season. That's on 21st of January at 8 p.m, which is, I mean, everybody knows what Call the Midwife is, I think, at this point. That's on BBC One, 21st of January. Major Crimes back for the second half of its final season.
I'm happy that it's back, but sad that it's going. So
that's coming back to the Universal Channel, 22nd of January at 9 p.m. And then Black Lightning, which is the brand new DC show, which is sort of connected but not connected to the other DC shows, which is why it's on Netflix and not on Sky. So season 1 of that coming 23rd of January. Very much looking forward to that, because I think it starts this week, so there's previews and stuff gone out, and it seems to have gone down fairly well with the previews. So yes, looking forward to that coming out. It looks like it's going to be fun. That's 23rd of January. That starts on Netflix in the UK. So that's everything we have for this week, I think. Thank you, Gray, for coming on, and hope you enjoyed your first episode.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You should be back on in a few weeks. If you want to find more information from us throughout the week, you can visit the website at geektown.co.uk and get all the latest air date info and news. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, you can email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.